Okay. How is it, Lisa? We didn't do a mic check, so is it good? Can you all hear me? Apparently, I'm not easy to mic. So we are just going to dive in and read Galatians. I'm actually going to go back a couple verses to the last two verses of chapter 5. So starting in Galatians 5, 25 through 26, and then what I'm preaching on this morning is chapter 6, verses 1 through 5. If we live by the Spirit, let us also walk by the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load. So this is one of those passages that if you read it as a standalone, without having looked at the rest of Galatians before it, it kind of sounds very dictatorial. This is a lot of Paul saying, do this, do this, and by the way, while you're doing that, keep watch on that, and it's kind of like, oh my goodness, that's heavy. That's a lot of stuff you're telling me to do. I don't know if I can do all that. And it actually sounds a little bit contradictory, because he says, bear one another's burdens, but each one must carry his own load. So you can sit there thinking, okay, Paul, make your mind up. Which one is it? What do you want me to do here? Well, fortunately, though, we have read all of Galatians, and at this point, we are steeped in Galatians. I went on the website and counted. So far, we have had, not including this one, we have had 17 sermons in Galatians. If you didn't hear them, you can go home and binge stream Galatians and just go for it. We are uncaged and free in ways that we never imagined we needed to be free. And so we can listen with different ears. And I'm sorry if you haven't heard them all. You're just going to have to catch up. Anyway, Paul has spent 5 chapters talking about how we're free. He does this in a lot of his letters. He spends the first part of his letter laying a framework of who God is, who we are, how we relate to God, but he really lays that foundation and that context, and then he starts getting specific and saying, okay, given that, in light of all that, this is how I want you to live. And then he starts talking about relationships and attitudes and all of that specific stuff, right? And Galatians is the same. So he's been talking about how we're free. We're free from following the law, all those legalistic, well-meaning but life-killing do's and don'ts and stuff. We're free from license to sin, from presuming on God's grace and forgiveness, just taking it as an easy free ticket to do whatever we please. And we're free to keep in step with the Spirit, living empowered and directed by God's Spirit. Now he's applying that freedom to relationships, how we're supposed to relate to one another, and especially in the church. For the most part, you know, I would say New Crossing is pretty healthy in this regard. We love God, and out of gratitude for the love that he has for us, we do love one another. I feel like our relationships in general really are pretty healthy. People enjoy each other. People celebrate together. People cheer each other on. People encourage one another. They pray for one another, listen to one another, help one another, all sorts of ways. But part of the point of Galatians in general, and especially this passage, is that we're not to compare ourselves with everyone else and evaluate how we're doing. We're supposed to go directly to the source, go to God, and ask him how we're doing. Ask him to speak into our lives. So yes, New Crossing Church in general does well in relationships compared with the rest of the world, maybe compared with other churches, I don't know. That, who cares? God wants us to listen to what he wants to say to each of us individually and to us as a church about how we're doing, and to listen about to what he's got for us in this regard, how he wants to speak into our lives. Because relationships are messy, aren't they? I hope you enjoy some good, healthy relationships with friends and family members and co-workers and spiritual family members. But at some point, we all hurt each other, don't we? I know I've hurt some of you. And if I've hurt you and I don't know it and I haven't apologized, please tell me. You can form a line after the service. If it gets really long, maybe wait until next week. Seriously, though, if I have hurt you, I would really like the opportunity to know that and to apologize to you. Some of you have hurt me. Many of you have apologized. We do experience hurt and rejection, abandonment. We feel used and misunderstood and devalued and ignored. And what does all that do to us? Well, it makes us want to put up walls, doesn't it? It makes us want to keep a safe distance and not get too involved, not let people in. And then we can go between wanting to put up the walls, not trust anybody, keep ourselves safe, and then we find, well, actually, I'm kind of lonely in this little isolated tower I've created. So then we tear down the walls and try and trust people, and sometimes that goes well, sometimes it doesn't. We can end up kind of swinging between the two. Paul sees all that, and he presents a healthy relationship solution for the church. He wants us to experience real freedom in our relationships. So what does true freedom, godly freedom, look like in how we relate to one another as a church? Well, he starts out in verse 1, and he tells us that we are free to restore others. Woohoo! Doesn't that sound like great freedom? Doesn't that sound like fun? Maybe. So let's read verse 1 again. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. How does that verse make you feel? What thoughts go through your head as you listen to that verse? Well, I don't really want to get involved in other people's transgressions. To be honest, I doubt they really want me to get involved. I'll just let the Spirit convict them if necessary. And it sounds a bit judgmental. Who am I to judge other people's transgressions? Not going there. And anyway, it's okay, it doesn't apply to me, because it says you who are spiritual, and I'm not very spiritual, so I don't need to worry about that. As a culture, we have become so overly sensitive to criticism. We're so insecure, we're so desperately trying to feel okay about ourselves that we don't want input from anyone. We're kind of okay just going and listening to something for ourselves, or maybe reading a book and applying it to ourselves, but we don't want anybody suggesting that we're transgressing. How dare you? Well, how sad. I need correction. You know, transgressions include things we willfully do wrong, as well as ways that we unintentionally mess up. I'm very capable of both. I'm certainly often blind to my unintentional sins, but I'm sometimes even blind to the fact that things I'm doing absolutely on purpose might be sinful. We tend to think of sin in terms of the big, the bad, and the ugly, you know, the murder, the adultery, the stealing, the doing illegal drugs and all that. And yes, this verse applies to being willing to come alongside someone if we become aware that they're getting trapped or caught in obvious sin. But it can be more subtle than that too. What's sin? Does anyone know what Romans 3:23 says? All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So sin is anything less than the glory of God. The glory of God is amazing perfection, right? So anything less than that is sin. So even when I'm living a decent moral life, I could easily still be stuck in transgression. My sharing could become a little bit gossipy, or my testimony can become pride, right? The verse talks about someone who's caught in transgression, suggesting this isn't just a one-time oops. This verse isn't giving us permission to correct someone every time they are less than perfect. Wouldn't that create a loving atmosphere in the church family, right? Paul isn't telling us to constantly critique one another and nag each other, but he is telling us to notice when we start to see a pattern. When someone seems stuck in a destructive behavior pattern or thought pattern, when someone's mode of communication becomes demeaning or grumbling, or if it sounds like they've got work habits that aren't totally honest, it takes courage. It's risky to approach someone about sin. Yeah, they might reject you. They might get defensive, or they might throw some harsh judgment back at you. Who are you? Who do you think you are to talk to me about that? And one of the barriers is that Paul says is you who are spiritual should restore others. Who here is spiritual? Come on, who here is spiritual? Exactly, all of you. You know, we tend to think, oh, maybe we should just leave this to the elders. What do you think, Scott, Rick, Craig? We'll just send them all to you and you can take care of them. That's not very fair, is it, right? Not for you guys anyway. It feels good for the rest of us, but not for you. If you've given your life to Christ, if you've asked him to forgive your sins and you're seeking to walk in step with the Spirit, you are spiritual. You're not perfectly spiritual. You're not perfectly in step with the Spirit, but you are spiritual. Again, this doesn't mean we run around assuming that all of our perceptions of other people's sins and transgressions are all totally Spirit-led accurate. But if we read the rest of the verse, we can all be involved in restoring one another. Because Paul just doesn't tell us to go do it. He tells us how. The first how is he says to do it gently, right? We're to be gentle, knowing that we're simply one sinner coming alongside another sinner, and knowing that there's usually something deeper behind the sin, and we can approach a brother or a sister gently. Well, how do you approach someone gently? I think a great way is to ask questions. Yeah, how are you doing? How are you doing in this area? What's going on? You know, I've noticed you seem to be struggling a little bit here. What's up? You can call them up. Is this really the full life that God intended for you when he drew you into relationship with him? Is this really God's best for you? You can express love and concern. You know, you're a person. That the other person is a human being. They're not just a behavior. They're not just this thing that they're doing wrong. Perhaps there's a good desire underneath it all that God wants to satisfy another way. And you can use I statements, I-based observations. You know, there may be another explanation. If you say, you know, I'm wondering, I've noticed, then they're less likely to be defensive than if you say, you are doing this, right? That immediately puts the wall up. So we can be gentle. And Paul also tells us to be humble. He doesn't use that word exactly, but he says, keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. We approach someone with the awareness that, you know what? I sin too. Perhaps not the same sin, but perhaps we could fall into pride that, well, I don't commit that sin. Perhaps judgment or smugness, even relief, well, I'm not that bad. And, you know, sometimes we can even start to feel a sense of sort of self-satisfaction or gloating or even enjoyment of correcting someone, this kind of air of superiority, right? So Paul's telling us to watch ourselves and to have an honest self-evaluation. We have to go before God and evaluate ourselves, our own heart, our own motives, not just evaluating what we see in that other person. What's our real concern? Is our concern that beautiful son or daughter of God, the other people that they affect? Or is our concern some arbitrary kind of image or expectation or standard that we want them to meet? This takes prayer. It takes a willingness to be naked before God. You know, I have noticed I am way more in tune with other people's sins when they're things I struggle with myself. You ever notice that? So I need to be careful to look at the log in my own eye before I start working on the speck in somebody else's. And at the same time as inviting the Spirit to help us with our own self-evaluation, we need to ask him to help us evaluate the other person and see them, value them the way that God sees them. Then we'll be more concerned with restoring this incredibly valuable and unique person into more of who God intended them to be when he created them. Paul doesn't want us to ignore each other's sin because when we become aware of it, because, you know, sometimes we're completely blind to our own sins. We really need someone we need a brother or sister to give us some perspective. And he doesn't want us to publicly humiliate one another either. All that does is shame people and create spiritual hierarchies. That's why gentleness and self-evaluation are so important. The goal here is restoration. What are we restoring? We're restoring someone's relationship with Christ. We're encouraging them to give God access to an area of their life that seems to be closed off. We're encouraging them to come into an alignment in an area where they're drifting. We're restoring them to the path that God laid out for their life, where they seem to be going off-road. We're restoring them to freedom in an area where they're becoming caught or caged by sin. And I want to give you an example. So I'm certainly not going to rag on anyone else. So this morning I'm going to pick on me. So here's a don't you love how God gives you sermon illustrations? So a couple weeks ago, I had invited the leaders of the Broomtree ministry to come for a Tuesday night. Broomtree offers five-day retreats for pastors and their spouses, and I'm on the board of that ministry. So I had said, would they like to come on a Tuesday night and be prayed for? They were thrilled, so they came on a Tuesday night. So somewhere, Clark is responsible for Tuesday nights, but somewhere in my thinking, I assumed that because I'd invited them and asked Clark if that would be okay, that I was responsible for taking care of worship for that night. So the Sunday before Tuesday, I go to Clark and I say, well, we got no live worship this Tuesday night, so I've picked out songs. Could you help me load them? And Clark looked at me and he said, why did you do that? And in that moment, I mean, it was perfect. It was a question. And that moment, I was so convicted. You know, it was like, yeah, why did I do that? You know, he didn't say, you're such an idiot. That's my job, you know? But in that moment, I realized that was so disrespectful to him. He's the leader of Tuesday. Did I intend to do that? No. But did I make a stupid assumption? Was it a transgression? Might that be a pattern in my life? Maybe. That took me through some self-examination. It was just a simple question. It was very gentle. He was so gracious. He said, please send me your song list. I've already prayed and picked out songs, but maybe there's some that are the same, and I think you ended up putting a mix of the two lists together. He was so gracious, so forgiving. It stung. It was hard. I didn't enjoy that moment. It took me a little while to recover, but I was so grateful. It was gentle, but it was correct. It was direct, right? All right, enough about my sins. Let's move on. We need to be willing to restore others, gently, humbly, with honest self-evaluation, and we also need to be willing to be restored, not to be defensive, not to be insecure, but to appreciate when a brother or sister loves us enough to rescue us when we start heading into the jungle. Thank you, Clark. So we're also free. We're not just free to restore others. We're free to help others. Let's read verse 2. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. This is another one of those things that can stop us short. Paul's been talking all through this letter about how Christ followers are free from following the law, meaning all those Old Testament requirements couldn't set us right with God anyway. They just help us see our sinfulness. Maybe they restrain the worst kind of evil. But our inability to keep every letter of the law just underscores the fact that the law can't save us. Receiving Christ and his Spirit, being favored sons, happens through what? Through? They haven't been listening, Craig. Happens through faith, right? You know that. I know. I'm just razzing you all. It's just like, which spiritual word she's looking for? Is it Jesus? No. This time it was faith, right? Okay. We become favored sons through faith, not through the law. We obey because we are favored sons and daughters, not in order to become favored sons. So why is Paul now talking about fulfilling the law of Christ? I think he's kind of playing with people. I think he's kind of playing with words. He's kind of saying, okay, all of you who like the law, because you can make it a little checklist and you can feel good when you keep your favorite parts of it, I can speak your legal lingo. Here's the real law that you need to follow, the law of Christ. So what is this law? Well, we look back at chapter 5, verse 14, and it says, for the whole law is fulfilled in one word. It's not one word, but, you know, word in the bigger sense. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. The law of Christ is love, loving neighbors, loving people around us. As we love ourselves, and Craig has very eloquently explained this, we don't love them more than we love ourselves, because then we'd become abused doormats. We don't love them less than we love ourselves, because then we become prideful and puffed up and selfish, using people for our own motives. But so we love them as we love ourselves. But if we go back to chapter 5, even the verse before that, verse 13, it says, "For you were called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another." And then verse 14, "For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." So the law of Christ means serving one another in love. The law of Moses was burdensome. It was a heavy load. But now in verse 2, Paul's spelling out what the law of Christ can look like. This law of loving service, bear one another's burdens. So instead of handing a burden to someone and insisting that they fulfill all these various requirements in order to please God, we serve them in love and actually help lift the burdens off one another. So Paul calls this the law of Christ because this is how Christ lived. His life was always focused on loving service rather than meeting the requirements of the law. So you may be wondering, what's a burden? Visual aid time. This is my backpack. Not only is this backpack super cute, has a lovely lining, see? It's got just the right pocket. See, it's got one for my water bottle. It's got one in here for my iPad, right? It's got a couple of little pockets in the front for doodads, and it's got the main pocket for everything else. Craig's backpack has 52 pockets. He loves it. It's perfect for him. Every little thing has its little place. I would lose everything if I had his backpack. I wouldn't remember where I put it. So for me, this backpack is perfect. Not only is it cute, it's also ergonomic. I can carry this thing all day. It's super comfortable. I have, even when it's fully loaded. If I'm traveling, I can carry this thing all day, right? This is my backpack. It's a load. This is my burden. This is my suitcase that I take to England. I can pick it up if I have to. Actually, it's not that heavy right now, I'll be honest. I didn't actually pack it. But if it was packed, it would be heavy. I could pick it up, I can carry it, but it's got wheels because none of you come with me when I travel to bear my burden. So I wheel it along and I throw it on the luggage carousel, right? Okay, this is a burden. I can carry it, but I can't carry it super long. And if I did, I wouldn't feel good, right? That's my burden. All right. We all have a backpack in life, right? We all have stuff. We all have stress. There's the financial stuff, matching the income with the expenses. There's the workload, the physical and mental work that we do to create the income. There's the relational stuff. Sometimes that helps lift the load. Sometimes it creates more of a load, right? We all have to deal with people everywhere we go. There's the health stuff. Most of us have something that we have to deal with health-wise, whether it's another cold or a bout of flu or a more serious injury or chronic problem. And then there's just the life load. There's the cleaning, the maintaining the house and the car and the yard and whatever else that we have to take care of. There's all kind of other loads that we have, but that's just part of life, right? And verse 5, when we get there, tells us that each of us has to bear his own load. I'll talk about that a little bit more later. We all have to deal with our own backpack. We have to take responsibility for our own lives. But there are times when the stuff is just too much. It becomes a burden. We're so sick, we can't take care of our family. We're so injured, we can't drive or we can't work. We're so discouraged, we really can't think straight. Or the work expected of us is just too much. Or the stress in relationships becomes distressed. Maybe we're overwhelmed by grief. Whatever it is, there's lots of ways that our load can become a burden. And Paul tells us that that's an important time for the church to step in, to serve one another in love by bearing one another's burdens. You know, even a small amount of burden bearing makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Have you ever tried picking up a heavy cooler, you know, when it's full of ice and water or whatever? It's awkward, it's not a good shape or whatever, and it's really heavy, right? But you get two people, you get one on each end, you definitely feel like you're carrying less than half, right? It's amazing. When life throws something heavy at you, it's encouraging to have someone show up. Even if they don't do a whole lot, you just don't feel so alone. Or when you're struggling and you know people are praying for you, or if they say something that you really needed to hear about then, you just feel less weighed down, more supported, right? You guys are seriously good at this, and I know I've used this example before, but it's a good one. So last December, when Craig was diagnosed with lupus, four guys showed up to finish the last of the drywall in our garage and to put up the shelves and take the boxes that have been there since we moved in off the garage floor, put them on the shelves, sweep out the garage. 3 hours, the whole project was done. To us, that was an insurmountable burden at the time. We couldn't do it. You know, winter's coming, we wanted to get cars in the garage, and it just felt like, oh, we're never going to get this done. Craig could barely walk upstairs at the time. It's amazing, look at him now. But anyway, but it was an insurmountable burden to us. But what a load those four guys shared, and I hope to them that wasn't too huge of a burden. People, you guys give each other rides to doctor's appointment, you cook each other meals when you're sick, or you clean each other's houses, you help each other paint, you help each other with projects, all kinds of stuff. You encourage each other. You provide scholarships for each other for retreats. You pray for each other. You show up for each other. You guys rock. Keep rocking. But we also need to consider verse 2 in light of verse 3. So let's read 2 and 3. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. So that little word for at the beginning of 3 is important because verse 3 kind of qualifies or adds a little bit to verse 2. I remember a little English saying, there but for the grace of God go I. Do you have that saying here too? There but for the grace of God. It's not just an English one. This is all about attitude. It's so easy to take pride in bearing someone else's burden. It feels good. And it should feel good. It is good. Loving service, fulfilling Christ's law of love is good. But it's easy to start thinking that we're better than the people that we're helping. You know, they're the ones with the burdens. We manage our finances better. We take better care of our bodies. We're better organized. We're more responsible. We're better at setting boundaries. You know, whatever. And that's what Paul's addressing here. Because it's easy to deceive ourselves. Basically, it's judgment and it's pride. It's easy to think that we're all that when actually any way that we might have it together is just a gift from God. Nobody has all the gifts. So yeah, maybe you're financially more responsible. Maybe you're, perhaps also you're less generous. I don't know. I'm not picking on anybody. I'm just giving examples. And yes, maybe you do take care of your body, but perhaps God just gave you better genes. The language that Paul uses in verse 3 is quite strong about thinking you're something when actually you're nothing. I mean, nothing. That's an extreme, right? It'd be easy for us to think, well, Paul, this is really taking it a bit far. You know, I may not be all that, but I'm not nothing. And one of the commentaries that I read, the Life Application Bible Commentary, there was a really great quote there. It said, when we humbly come to God, we are something, loved and valuable. When we are blinded by sinful pride, we are nothing to Him. Isn't that good? When we humbly come to God, we are something, loved and valuable. When we are blinded by sinful pride, we are nothing to Him. So when we see someone that needs help, we do so with loving service. But we have to do a little honest self-evaluation and make sure we're not developing a superior attitude. Perhaps we don't have the same weak areas as the people we're helping, but we all have weak areas. So we come alongside people and we bear their burdens. We help shoulder the load. And we do this not as a benevolent act of condescension, but obeying the law of Christ as an act of loving service. So Paul tells us to restore one another when we sin, but to watch ourselves so that we don't sin ourselves in the process through our superior attitudes. And he basically says the same thing about bearing one another's burdens. We're to do that, but with self-examination as an act of humble, loving service. But then he also tells us that we are free to stand alone before God. So let's read verses 4 and 5. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor, for each one will have to bear his own load. These verses are so important in light of verses 1 to 3. Without these verses, it would be easy to get over-involved in one another's lives, to the point of correcting each other and helping each other so that we're even enabling. And isn't that one of our greatest fears that actually keeps us from relating to one another in these ways? Keeps us from putting up these sort of relational privacy fences? We don't want to become meddlesome in each other's lives. We don't want to get so involved in other people's business that we become some mutual enablement society. So actually, verse 5 isn't a contradiction to verse 2, each carry your own load, but bear one another's burdens. It's a huge relief. Have you heard of the book Boundaries by Townsend and Cloud? That's what Paul's talking about here. He's talking about having appropriate boundaries in our relationships. We're each to carry our own ergonomic backpack. Sure. At the end of the day, your shoulders might be tired and you might need a good night's sleep, but you wake up the next morning ready to pick it up and go again. When the load becomes a burden, too much for one person, we're supposed to help one another carry it. But we aren't supposed to carry the daily load. That's called enabling. If we're paying someone's bills so that they cannot work or they can spend their money on frivolous things, that's enabling. If we're saving a drug addict from the consequences of their addiction by supporting them, that's enabling. If we're running someone else's kids around so they can be a workaholic, that might be enabling. I'm not picking on anybody again. I'm just giving examples here. We can have healthy boundaries. You may help someone out. You might clean their house or take them a meal when they're sick, but you don't keep bringing them meals when they're better. You might pay a bill for someone when they have an unexpected crisis hit, but you don't keep paying their bills every month. God calls us to live sustainable lifestyles. We all have finite time, money, ability, and resources. There's something about all the popular messages out in our society that tell us we can be anything that we want to be, we can do anything that we want to do, and we have a right to a certain lifestyle or certain privileges. And it's not true, and it's not helpful. So we need to ask God what our life load should look like, what for each of us. How am I to use my time, the time God has given me? What commitments can I make? How much time can I spend in hobbies and recreation? How much sleep do I need? That's different for everybody. How can I live within my means? How much do I need to work? Where am I supposed to give and serve? And where am I not supposed to give and serve? And I think that helps us to be more willing to bear one another's burdens, knowing that we don't also have to take on one another's loads, one another's backpacks. That's between each of us and Jesus. For those of you who attended the ministry training day yesterday or remember what Craig said at the celebration service and the letter that he sent out after that, this is what we mean when we talk about being a simple church and being simple Christians. It means going to God and asking him, what should be in my backpack? My backpack might contain more or less than your backpack. My daily load might be heavier or lighter than yours. And my backpack may contain very different things from yours. Verse 4 tells us we aren't supposed to all come and line up our backpacks and compare them. We're not supposed to bring in our backpacks, make sure we're all carrying about the same amount and similar kinds of things, right? Each of us holds up her backpack, his or her backpack, before God and asks, what should be in it? What's my workload? What's my relational load? What's my marriage, parenting, and family life supposed to look like? How are you calling me to love others? How are you calling me to bless others? BK, before kids, back in California, Craig and I used to go on backpacking weekends with friends. So we'd set off with much bigger backpacks with these because we'd have everything. We'd have tents, bedding, clothing, food, even water, because a lot of the places that we went in the mountains didn't have a water source. So big backpacks. Craig always carried more stuff than I did. Did you notice he's still doing that today? He's carrying the podium for me. Anyway, but he would carry far more than I did because I'm lazy. Well, no. He's bigger and stronger than me. He's a man. Private joke. He's a man. Sorry. Anyway, so he would carry more in his backpack than I carried, right? So we had these friends, Chris and Sue, that we would backpack with, and we found out on about, I think, the third or fourth trip that Chris's backpack was ridiculously heavy because he was literally carrying everything for him and Sue, right? And so you know what Sue had in her backpack? Because her backpack was just as big as all of ours. Do you know what was in it? Her fluffy bed pillow. That was it. That was it. I don't think most of us even took pillows, but she wanted a pillow, so she took a pillow. So Chris was in really good shape, and so he just carried everything. Sue was kind of delicate, and she had some joint issues and stuff, so, you know, she just didn't carry very much, and they were good with that. It wasn't a big deal. Chris wasn't all proud of himself because he is carrying everything for both of them. We didn't even know about it until, like, the third or fourth trip, right? I think someone picked up Sue's backpack and was like, woo, you know. But and Sue wasn't like all insecure about the fact that, oh, he's having to carry everything for me. It was just, yeah, this is who we are and this is what we're doing. Isn't that beautiful? That's what verse 4 is all about. Don't worry about everyone else's backpacks. There will always be those people around who seem to be able to carry, you know, do momentous amounts, ridiculous amounts of stuff. And there will always be people who are very limited in what they can do in a day, either physically or emotionally. And it's so easy to look at someone else because we couldn't do what they could do, right? But we all have different gifts. We all have different abilities, different capacities, different callings, right? The fruit of the Spirit that Craig was talking about last week, those character traits that God wants to develop in our lives, they are the same for everyone. Sure, some of us might be better at some of them than others. We're all a work in progress. But God wants to grow and cultivate all of those fruits of the Spirit in all of us, right? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. He wants us all to develop those character qualities. But the work that we're called to do is very different for each one of us. We all have different abilities, different gifts, different capacities, and we each reflect different parts of God's image. So the backpacks that we carry through life are going to look very, very different. The work each of us does is going to be very different in quality and in quantity. So verse 4 says, but let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. The point isn't to see how I'm doing by comparing myself with everybody else. If everybody else is doing lousy, you might be doing lousy plus one. That's not so great, okay? Right? Or if everybody else is doing great, but you're doing good, you might feel horrible about yourself. And that's just not helpful. The point is to take our backpack to God for testing, for examination. We ask God, am I carrying what you want me to carry? Am I using my resources? Am I using the time, the money, the gifts you've given me in the way that you intended? Am I doing what you want to do? Am I doing things you never intended for me to do? And we're not good at that, are we? We think we need to do what everybody else is doing. We think our family and our kids need to be involved in all the things that other people are involved in. And we think we need to accomplish and take on all those norms of everybody around us. Instead, we let him speak into our lives. We follow his lead, and then we relax. This is my backpack. I love it. I'm carrying exactly what God gave me to carry, and I can carry it all day because it's the backpack that he gave me. And we have to keep asking, we have to keep testing, we have to keep letting God adjust our backpack according to the season of our lives. Maybe God's calling you to a busy season. Maybe he's calling you to a quiet, reflective season. Maybe he's calling you to new things, and maybe he's calling you to let go of something. It's going to change over time. Stop worrying about what everyone else is doing and what everyone else is carrying. Test your own work before God. Let him tell you if it's time to feel good. That he says, you can boast. If you've gone to God and you're carrying, you can feel good about it. You can boast. Or is it time for a change? So how do we do this? How do we walk this line, in a sense, of restoring people when we see them get caught in transgression, but not sinning ourselves through our judgmental or smug kind of attitudes? How do we bear one another's burdens without starting to enable one another or get all puffed up about that we're doing so great helping people? And how do we bear the load that God's given each of us without comparing and competing with one another? You know, I was teaching on some stuff related to this last fall in Christian Life College, and I started remembering an experience I had last fall. Last time I was back in England, I took my mom to the ocean. There's a spot she loves to go. She likes to go to West Worthing. She used to go there with my dad. And it's a typical English post-Victorian seaside town. So it basically has a concrete promenade walkway. And she loves it because she can get there with her walker. And it's just a really nice spot for her to be and enjoy the sea. So there's a concrete walkway. And then there's a wall. And I suppose it's about a foot wide, and it's probably about this tall. And then beyond the wall, there's big pebbles. It's a big pebbly beach, quite fairly steep, and it goes down 20 or 30 feet. And then at low tide, there's a beautiful sandy beach beyond that, and gets the Gulf Stream up from Mexico. The water's warm. It's great. Anyway, so that's the picture. So you've got a concrete walkway, you've got a wall, and you've got these rocks. So along comes Grandpa with a little wobbly toddler grandson. And so they're walking along. Well, where does little wobbly toddler grandson want to walk? Does he want to walk on the concrete where it's nice and safe? No, of course not. He wants to walk on the wall, right? Right? So what does Grandpa do? Does he say, no, you have to walk on the concrete where it's safe? No, he lets him walk on the wall, right? But he doesn't let him just wobble along the wall, because then he's going to either do a face plant in the concrete or he's going to end up in the rocks and hurt himself there, right? So what does he do? He holds his hand, right? So here's Grandpa walking along with grandson. Grandson thinks he's king of the seaside, having a wonderful time walking along the wall. He's so high up, he can enjoy the view. And Grandpa's thoroughly enjoying his grandson. That's the picture here, right? The concrete, it's all the rules, it's the law, it's all the things that we, all those standards that we try and meet to fight, feel good about our Christian life, all the things that we take pride in, all that stuff that Paul's been talking about with keeping the law that doesn't save you anyway, right? And the rocks, that's the license to sin, you know? I mean, rocks, have you ever tried walking on rocks? They look so fun, they look so inviting, and then you try and walk on them and they're really hard work. And then eventually you end up twisting your ankle or falling and hurting yourself, and that's license to sin, right? It looks inviting, but you get out there and eventually somebody gets hurt. So we want to walk on the wall, where you're a little higher up, you can have a little more perspective of what's going on in other people's lives, what's going on in your own lives. God's Spirit can give you a better view. But we don't just want to walk along where we're likely to get distracted and fall, or, you know, we're looking over here, so we end up walking off the wall and fall off, right? We don't want to just walk along by ourselves. Maybe you're afraid of heights, and that would just be terrifying. But what do we want to do? We go back to verse 25 in chapter 5. If we live by the Spirit, we will also walk by the Spirit. So we hold the Spirit's hand, right? And we can walk along the wall and not worry about falling off. And he gives us the perspective between the two extremes. That's the picture that Paul's giving us here. So let's pray. Close your eyes. God, you give us a high calling to love people enough to be willing to come alongside them and restore them to the path that you've laid out for them if they're going astray, to bear one another's burdens and to carry our own loads and to do all this without getting all stuck up and proud, and to do all this without being all self-righteous. And God, we can only do that with your Spirit. We can only do that if we hold on to you. We can only do that if we stay on the wall so that we have your perspective. So Lord, would you come by your Spirit and would you show us the areas where we're reluctant to approach one another, or the areas where we wouldn't let anybody approach us about our transgression. Would you speak to each one of us? Would you show us the areas where you want us to be bold? Would you show us the places where you want us to be bearing one another's burdens? And God, would you help us do all this with honest self-evaluation? We really need your Spirit because we are so easily deceived. God, shine the light of your Spirit into each of our lives and show us where maybe we're doing the right thing but with an attitude of judgment or pride, or where we're just lacking courage to do what you're calling us to do. God, show us the places that we've put things in our backpack that you didn't intended, or we haven't put things in our backpack that you really want us to be carrying, God. We need your Spirit. Would you help each of us today, God? Help us as we continue to worship, continue to speak to us, each of us. In Jesus' name, amen.